This has to do with the burden of Babylon. Remember, Isaiah wrote quite a lengthy time before Jeremiah wrote, and yet we can still see the same thing happening here. In verse 1, with the burden of Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw. And lift ye up a banner. See how similar this is to what Jeremiah. Lift up a banner up on high. A mountain, exalt the voice of the voice unto them. Shake the land, shake the hand. You already see that. And that they may go unto the gates of the noble and so forth. I'm not going to go into that, but this is to who this is written to, the concerning Babylon. And this is judgment on Gentiles. All Gentiles, he represents the Gentile nations. Now let's drop down to verse 17 of this chapter. This is what I really wanted. It says, behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. So you can't buy them off. They didn't what they were after. They were after freedom, was what they were after. Their bows also shall dash the young men in pieces, and they have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. Now, how horrible these people were, absolutely unmerciful, when they came into to conquer Babylon. And yet, many of those, they were both Shemites, weren't they? The Chaldeans and the Elamites are all the same people. Now, I think I'll read a couple of more verses there. Their bows also dash the young men in pieces, and they shall have no pity. Well, I read that. Verse 19. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans, excellence shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. And it shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tents there, and neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. But wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures and owls which dwell there, and satyrs shall dance therein. And I was reading this early this morning. I thought, well, how the mighty fall. One day they're inconquerable, the next day they're destroyed. Now, this was done overnight. And we talked about this when we were in Daniel, of how Belshazzar there was having this big party, and God put a handwriting on the wall concerning his end. And before they knew it, the Medes and the Persians were in the land and completely destroyed it. And this was an indestructible city. Couldn't be destroyed. And yet God's timing, God's purpose were brought to pass in these things. So Isaiah goes along with this pretty well in these thoughts, that God would empty them. Then in the fourth verse, back to our lesson, says, in those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together, going and weeping, and they shall go and seek the Lord their God. How wonderful. In the last days. And this hasn't been fulfilled. This has had a partial fulfillment. They did go. When their 70 years is over, and the Medes and the Persian, and under Darius, and later on Xerxes, and others of the kings of Persia, they was allowed to go back in the land. But not everybody went back. Here we read of Israel and Judah. Very few of the 10 tribes went back into the land. mostly all of Judah that went back. The people that was living in north tried their best to hinder, actually, rather than help. And so most of these were of Judah. And they would come, the prophecy here is they would come together, going and weeping, they shall go and seek the Lord in those days. In Ezra 1, who read last? Roberta, verses 3 through 5 of the first chapter of Ezra. And in these first chapters of Ezra, how they went with anticipation and hope to build a temple. Okay, go ahead and read this. All right, now, in comparison with that, this was under Cyrus, verse 1, king of Persia. And this is also almost word for word of 2 Chronicles 36:22 through there. But Isaiah gives us some thought in Isaiah 44:28. And this is what he says, that thus saith Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all that my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and thy temple and thy foundation shall be laid. Now, this was even before Cyrus was even thought of, that Isaiah wrote this. And yet God prophesied and named this man by name, that he was the one that was going to give them permission to go in and build the temple. And then in chapter 2 of Ezra, see if I can find that. Maybe it's still in 1, I don't know. Anyway, this is all good reading. That when they begin to build the temple, I'll have to find, well, maybe you can help me find it. It might be the 3rd chapter, I believe it is. That some wept because the older people wept because it wasn't like...
Yeah,
12 and 13 is what I have in my chapter 3. But many priests and the Levites and the chiefs of the fathers who were ancient men that had seen the first house when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, they wept aloud and many shouted for joy. So we had weeping and shouting going on at the same time, so that the people could not discern the noise of the shout for joy from the noise of the weeping of the people. For people shouted with a great shout, and the noise was heard afar off. But there was adversaries at the time. And in chapter 4, we see that these adversaries tried to fool them. And Zerubbabel saw through what they were doing. But they came and noticed what they said in verse 2 of chapter 4. Let us build with you, for we seek your God as you do. And we do sacrifice unto him. Since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, which brought us up thither. Esarhaddon was a successor of Sennacherib. And so we're talking about people from, well, let's see, later on, notice in verse 7, in the days of Artaxerxes, wrote these men, and I'm not going to read all that, wrote a letter to Artaxerxes, and the writing of the letter was written in Syrian tongue and interpreted in Assyrian tongue. Our Armenian tongue would probably be a better rendering of that. And so these people had no rights. Sometimes a religious flesh, religious systems of the world will try to enter in and be a part. Sometimes it's awful hard on people to discern what is religious and what is political. And it's very, very difficult to know right from wrong. Jude tells us about people who would enter into your love feast. And it's difficult to tell, but they're not friends. They come in to try to destroy rather than try to build. And these are religious systems that would would hinder rather than help. Well, all these things we see that happen to them. So it's going to be even more so, is what I want to say, in the last days. In those days this happened. And then in verse 5, and they shall ask the way to Zion with their faces thitherward, saying, come, and let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. Isaiah gives us another thought too, 12th chapter. Alan, look at it for me. That whole 12th chapter, just about six verses in the 12th chapter of Isaiah, but it tells about the joy that we'll have when they go back to into the land. Read the old chapter for me, it won't take long. But you see, this hasn't been fully fulfilled, has it? They haven't really done all of these things. They went into the land, this is true, and shouted, Greg, Hosea 1:11, I think, gives us some similar thought along this line. We could read several other verses, and I think it's chapter 3, verse 5. Try that. There's a lot of verses that we could read concerning them coming in the land. But you see, this is only partially fulfilled, especially this verse 5. So much of this is yet to be fulfilled. The word, and they shall ask the way to Zion. Now, they knew the way to Zion as far as the road was concerned. That was a pretty good highway from the north, and they knew the way to Zion, even from Babylon. This is the same way that Abraham came to start with. But the word way here comes from a Hebrew word that means a course of life. And so this is what they wanted, the way of life, the way to go to the blessings of God. God's blessings was in Zion, and this is what he wanted. Jack, look up Isaiah 59, verse 8, is another wonderful verse along the same line, I think, if my memory's right, of them choosing a course of life. And this way of life is in Jesus Christ. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man can come unto the Father but by me. And they've never really come this way before. 59:8. So, which is the way of peace? Not the way they've been going, is it? That was a way of destruction and fear. It wasn't a way of peace. And then there's another verse, I don't remember just where it is in Isaiah. It says, there's no peace for the wicked. There's no peace for the wicked. So the way they had been going was a wrong way. Now, which way should we go for the blessings of God to go to Zion? Well, they shall ask the way to Zion with their faces thitherward. Another rendering of that is hitherward. And the thought of the word is steadfastness, to be direct of purpose, not to be hindered, might be a good rendering of that. And as we read in Ezra 4, they refused to be hindered. They just kept plunging on, didn't they, and building and building and building. And later on, Nehemiah came on the scene, and they built the wall and nothing. They built with one hand and had a sword in the other, and nothing could hinder them from going on. Well, I think we're going to have this just a picture of what's going to happen when they Jesus, when they see their Messiah, when they see the Lord. You see, that land is going to be devastated in completely destroyed and down to nothing when the tribulation is over. It's going to be a terrible place. If they think an army of Chaldeans could come in and destroy, if they think the army of Titus could come in and destroy and tear a city down, what do you think they can do with tanks and missiles and all of those things that man has a day of destruction? But when they see Jesus, they're going to be so excited about their Messiah, and they're all going to pitch in with everything they've got, and God's going to take care of them. He's going to protect them, and they're going to rebuild. And Jerusalem is going to be a wonderful place. Of course, the heavenly Jerusalem is going to be a more wonderful place. But the thought here is, come, let us join ourselves, or join together as one to the Lord in a perpetual covenant. See, they've never had a perpetual covenant. They've never had an unforgettable covenant. And where is that? Anyway, they're going to have a covenant written on the tables of their heart, a law. 2 Corinthians 3 tells us, gives us a thought along that line, but they're thinking there's a verse in Isaiah 2 that says, I'm going to write my law upon the fleshly tables of their heart. 61, that's wonderful. Of the attitude that will be when they, that's a perpetual covenant, is an everlasting covenant. That hasn't been fulfilled yet, has it? And so it will be, and they're going to have an unforgettable covenant. And then in verse 6, he said, my people hath been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to go astray, and they have turned them away on the mountains, and have gone from mountains to hills and forgot their resting place. God's sheep are lost sheep. They were still lost sheep in Jesus' time, weren't they? They're still lost sheep today, even in the church's last days. And there are a lot of verses that we could read along that line. Jack, Matthew 10, I think there's four different places where Jesus called them the house of the lost sheep of Israel, and he considered them lost sheep. Matthew 10:6, and go ahead. Now this is the message to a lost sheep. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. And if those lost sheep would have been recovered, then the kingdom of heaven would have been to Israel, to the Jewish people. But they weren't. Then while you're there in Matthew in 15:24, and Evelyn, look up Luke 15:4. But Matthew 15:24 came into his own, John 1:11, the house of the lost sheep of Israel. Now, 18:11, over and over again, you see, he called them lost sheep, seeking to save that which was lost. That was his purpose for coming, wasn't it? Seeking to save that which was lost. In Luke 15:4-6, we have a lost sheep. In the 15th chapter of Luke, we have three lost things, don't we? We have the lost sheep, lost coin, and a lost son. And all three of these are pertaining to the people, to God's people there. And they were lost. But read that from 4-6, I think is what I want to stay with. Isn't that beautiful? But you see, they didn't recognize him. He would have taken them and put them upon his shoulders and carried them, wouldn't he? If they would have just let him. They would have been loved and protected and kept. But they're going to be, even so. There's coming a day when Jesus, they'll recognize him as their Savior, as their Messiah, and they'll know him as their shepherd. They've never known anything but lost shepherds. I'm not a lost shepherd. They've never known anything but false shepherds all their life, especially in the last days. And we've read in Jeremiah, was it 25, about the false shepherds, and how God was going to judge the false shepherd. But one of these days we're going to see the good shepherd. Amen. That we read in John 10. He said, I am the good shepherd of the sheep. And in 1 Peter 5, verse 4, he's the chief shepherd of the sheep. And in Hebrews 13, what verse is that? Verse 20, I think he's called a great shepherd of the sheep. And so they're going to recognize him as such, is what we're saying. Getting back to verse 6, he said, my people hath been lost sheep. Their sheep have been caused that, their shepherds, their false shepherds, have caused them to go astray. They have turned them away on the mountains and have gone from mountain to hills. Now, mountains and hills both are a type of kingdoms, smaller and larger. We see this in the 17th chapter of Revelation, a woman sitting on seven hills are controlling. When you sit on some, it means you control it. I know a lot of people say that that's Rome, and Rome sits on seven hills and this and that. But this false woman is more than Rome there. This false woman is the ecumenical system of religion that will have a power in the last days. It will be Rome, without doubt. But as we're talking about Babylon here and the Babylonian system of the last days, then the mountains and the hills are kingdoms that will be in harmony with this system. Well, we might turn over to the 18th chapter of Revelation just for a minute and notice who is going to destroy this religious system. In the latter part of the 18th chapter, I'm sorry, latter part of the 17th chapter is what I want. The 17th chapter, verse 16 through 18. And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, this false system, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Now, earlier we were told who the 10 horns are. See if my eyes will find that. Verse 12, and the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings. So there's no doubt that these horns are kings that will make war with her. These are kingdoms. And then we read, didn't think about looking at this before, in verse 9 and 10, and there is the mind which hath wisdom, the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now heads speak of powers or authority. And so the mountains and the heads, you see, are the same. Then in verse 10, and there are seven kings, and five are fallen, and so forth. So we're talking about powers that are in harmony with the political system. And then going back down to the horns, they're going to make war with this false woman. So the political system will overcome and destroy the religious system. And that's when the Antichrist will come into his full power at that time. Chapter 18 is the full account of that. Verses 16 through 18 is an epitome of chapter 18. And so verse 17, we read that God put it in our hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom to the beast until the word of God shall be fulfilled. So God is bringing all these together, and what we're seeing of the Medes and the Persians and the conqueror and there and all are just a shadow of what's going to really happen in the last days. So let's go back to our lesson. All them that found them have devoured them. Now this is in the past. Notice the past tense of verse 7. And their adversaries said, we offend not because they have sinned against the Lord. So the heathen nations of the Gentile empires all the way down has taken advantage of the Jewish people. But they said, we've done anything wrong. We're not guilty of that. We've done nothing wrong. God, is there God that judged them, not us? But they were guilty. Even though God used them as a tool, they didn't have to be as brutish and cruel as they were. They didn't have to go all that distance. Getting back to Roberta, look up Zechariah 11. 3 and 4, and Ellen, Psalms 79, verses 5 through 10. They were guilty, is the point that we're trying to make here, and God is going to judge them for their guilt. Zechariah 11, 4 and 5. So God says you are guilty. They said they're not. But who's the final judge? And God is going to hold them guilty because of what they were. They took pleasure in this. It was something that they wanted to do. And like I say, they were real cruel, murdering children and just for the fun of it. And it's going to be worse in the last days. Can you picture a bunch, an army built up of dope addicts going in and slain? And you might compare this with the second chapter of Joel and the brutishness there. It's terrible. All right, 79 Psalm. And God is going to remember, isn't he? And God is going to stand behind them in these last days. Notice the ending of verse 7 here, the habitation of even the Lord, the hope of their fathers. And this hope is going to be built up in them, a hope of restoration, and be brought into the place that God had given them to start with. Verse 8, remove out of the midst of Babylon, and go forth out of the land of the Chaldeans, and be as the he-goat before the flock. This is a call, verse 8, and it's equivalent to Revelation 18:4. It says, come out from among them, my people. I don't think I can quote that. Greg, look at it for me. But the cry there, when Babylon is fallen, crumbling, then he cries for them to come out. And along with this same thought is Isaiah 48:19-22, and Evelyn, Zechariah 2:4-9, and many others that we could read concerning God bringing his people out of a system and making them free. I said before, this had a partial fulfillment when they came out of Babylon and went and built the temple and built the walls and all these things, but it's just a shadow of these things. You find that 48:19-22. That's the one I was saying a while ago. But you see, God was faithful to them before, wasn't he? Will he not be faithful to them again when they trust him and put away their idolatry? Of course he will. And he's going to bring them out of these systems. And anybody else at that time that wants to come out. It's not just them. Anyone. And then Zechariah 2:4-9. Isn't that beautiful? Before they went back and built a wall, the next time God says, I'm going to be your wall. I'm going to be your protection. A wall of fire, nothing can come in and hurt you. And so there will be another call to come out of this. And notice it says, be as a he-goat before the flock. I think at the thought here of the he-goat is a strong leader. Now God had some strong leaders when they come out before. And he's going to have some strong leaders again. We had Ezra and Nehemiah and Zerubbabel, and we could look up the scriptures there concerning how great a leaders they were. In Nehemiah 7, verses 6 and 7, and Ezra 3, we picked up on some of that. Zechariah 4, first 14 verses, and Haggai 2, verse 23, and all of these are pertaining to leadership. But God is going to have a better leadership. Zerubbabel was a lineage to the throne. And we read his genealogy in Matthew 1, well, and also in Luke 2. I think both of them, or Luke 3 rather. In Luke 3, I think both those genealogies have Zerubbabel in it. But God is going to have some that will be he-goats before the flock. Then in verse 9, he said, "Lo, I will raise and cause to come up against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north, and they shall set themselves in array against her. From thence she shall be taken." That's her fall. "Their arrows shall be as a mighty expert man." None of them will miss, in other words. "None shall return in vain." We might notice something. We go back up to verse 3, and we have a singular of nations. In verse 9, we have plural. And I feel that this is a latter time where many nations will come down that will be identified with what we know now is of Iraq and Iran, and that many will come down. And then in verse 10, we have the Chaldeans shall be a spoil. "All that spoil her shall be satisfied, saith the Lord." So here they were something before with great power and authority, but now they're brought down to absolutely nothing, and God was in it. God directed the arrows when they came in, and God is going to direct the missiles and everything the next time that these armies come down. Just as sure as he brought these arrows down. Verse 9, we'll read that none of them will be in vain or without cause or purpose. You see, God's going to execute his purpose in what is coming to pass. Try to find a stopping place. So all of this will be a spoil. I guess verse 10 is about as good a place as any to stop in it.